Okay, now we're going to go from the history of regional music to the history of the Commonwealth and a little bit of Southern history in a larger sense. I'm joined in the studio now by Dr. Duane Boland and Dr. David Pizzo, who were part of, two of 72 college professors who signed a letter calling for the removal of the statue of Jefferson Davis to the Kentucky, I forget the name of the organization, it was Kentucky Historical Properties Commission? That's a good question, huh? calling for the removal of the statue of Jefferson Davis from the Capitol Rotunda. And I thought it was a particularly interesting, of course, this is in light of the tragic church shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, upon which followed very hard the removal of the Confederate battle flag from the South Carolina State Capitol. And this kind of caps off of the last 10 or 15 years that we've seen the occasional and sporadic removal of symbols. For instance, the battle flag taken off the Georgia state flag, and now even Mississippi is talking about removing the state the battle flag from it. Now, let's kind of delve into the controversy. When we talk about removing Jefferson Davis from the state capitol, what are you hearing are the primary objections to that action? Dr. Boland?
Well, I think there's a lot of misperceptions about the letter that Dr. Pizzo and I signed. But first of all, the letter did not call for the destruction, certainly, of the statue. The letter called for the removal of the statue from the Capitol Rotunda in Frankfort, perhaps to the Thomas D. Clark Museum in Frankfort, where, by the way, the statue would be viewed by thousands of more visitors than in the Capitol Rotunda. So we're not calling for, certainly, the destruction of history. Mm. You know, we're calling for...
an adjustment, perhaps?
An adjustment, and we're calling for, you know, the Capitol Rotunda in Frankfort is a place to honor Kentuckians who have made significant contributions to Kentucky history. And there in the Capitol Rotunda, there are five statues, all white male Kentuckians. There's a statue of Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, Ephraim McDowell, a doctor, Alvin Barkley, and Jefferson Davis. All of Jefferson Davis's biographers, particularly William J. Cooper, who wrote a magisterial biography of Jefferson Davis, Jefferson Davis American, have pointed out that even Jefferson Davis himself considered himself not to be a Kentuckian, but to be a Mississippian. Hmm. Jefferson Davis, of course, was born in 1808 in Kentucky. He studied at Transylvania University in Lexington. But when he moved to the South, he moved to the Deep South state of Mississippi. And from then on, he always considered himself to be a Mississippian. Hmm. And it was when his home state of Mississippi seceded from the Union, although he had been the Secretary of War under Franklin Pierce, although he had been a war hero in the Mexican War, that was the point where he decided to go with the South and to join the Confederacy, eventually, of course, rising to become president of the Confederacy. So it was as a Mississippian that he saw himself, not as a Kentuckian. And so my argument, and I think the argument of the other 71 signers of the letter would be that here's a man who really did not make a significant contribution to Kentucky history, yet we're honoring him as such with the statue in the Capitol Rotunda.
You know, it's interesting you point that out, that he considered himself something other. And, you know, here we are in a town with a Confederate memorial. And atop that memorial is the figure of Robert E. Lee, who, to my knowledge, never came to this part of Kentucky. Perhaps he went past it. He was, I believe, in St. Louis for a time. when he was in the Army Corps of Engineers. And yet we have that commemorative statue. Why are we so hesitant to turn loose of those symbols, even if those symbols aren't really particularly factually connected to us? Dr. Pizzo.
I also want to just add something to what Dwayne just said. This is a state in which most of the people that fought, fought for the Union. Mm. This is a state that did not secede. I've been in Kentucky about 10 years now. I'm from North Carolina. That is a state that did secede. And one of the weirdest things I ever saw was the first time I was in the Rotunda and I saw Jefferson Davis. What is he even doing here? First reaction. but in terms of those symbols, those are a product of the era after the Civil War. So during the so-called Lost Cause movement, when essentially I think Kentucky to some degree had buyer's remorse about staying in the Union when it became clear that slavery was in fact ending, because one of the compromises that kept Kentucky in the Union was Lincoln saying, we're not going to touch this institution. And so as you had the rising tide of segregation and the rise of Jim Crow, essentially Kentucky became part of that and essentially ex post facto consigned itself to the Confederacy.
It does seem as though most people tend to kind of, I don't want to say ignore, but kind of let that the symbols of the Confederacy kind of fade into the background until someone says, maybe we should think about getting rid of it.
Indeed.
Why that? That almost seems kind of discordant to me that they, if you're going to think about that, you should be willing to kind of look at it a bit more objectively. But can you, either of you, kind of unpack the cultural connection? I mean, why can't we let it go even now here in 2015?
The Confederacy lost the Civil War. As far as the symbols controversy, whether it's the Confederate battle flag or whether it's a statue of Jefferson Davis, Wendell Berry has said, you know, that the flag, the statue, they're more than a symbol. The Confederate flag is more than a symbol. It's a finger, you see. Mm. It's a. This is a way to say, you know, okay, we lost the war, but
that finger.
It's a finger.
Yes, a specific finger.
Right. Right.
You
right.
See. So I think and I'm not saying that for every displayer of that symbol. I'm not saying it for everyone, but you know that for some diehard Southerners that are still fighting the Civil War, I think for some Southerners, and I'm a Southerner, you know, I'm a Southerner, but for some Southerners, that's why they display those symbols. Mm. It's a finger, not just a symbol.
I think also one of the reasons people react this way is I think it taps into a general feeling of sort of pathos and fear about America and the South changing. I mean, we live in a community where just down the road in Mayfield, there was a Somali mosque discussed.
Right.
Just to tell you how rapidly West Kentucky is changing just like the rest of the world. And I think there's a lot of fear and apprehension that politicians tap into all the time. I think the sort of vitriolic reaction you're seeing has a lot to do with these general feelings of being besieged, flooded, surrounded, that go to a lot more than even just feelings about the Confederacy, but feelings about sort of white, male America. Mm.
Here in Kentucky, you know, David raised a great point, a good point. 100,000 soldiers fought for the Union. Mm. 40,000 soldiers fought for the Confederacy. And, you know, the great historian, the Southern historian, Merton Coulter, made the point that Kentucky only seceded after the Civil War.
Exactly. Right.
So Kentucky turned southward, you know, and a lot of that had to do, quite honestly, a lot of that had to do with the Union occupation of the state and some atrocities, especially by the general Stephen Burbridge, during the Union occupation of the state. The Great Hog Swindle, for instance, and some executions by the Union of the state. And that reviled so many Kentuckians during the years of Union occupation. And that turned a lot of Kentuckians against the Union in the waning years of the war that continued in the years after the war.
So many people who defend their personal or their institutional display of the battle flag rely on the heritage, not hate, line of reasoning. And I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that doesn't seem to cut much ice with you two. Can you describe how you respond to that?
My initial response is that when it comes to the flag, it did not become a symbol, a very strong symbol of Southern identity until civil rights. Hmm. You know, you were talking about Emmett Till this morning. I mean, its appearance as a symbol of Southern identity does not date to 1866 through 1890. It's not from the post-Civil War era. The battle flag as a symbol for Southernness and Southern pride dates to precisely the last major era where you had friction, racial tension. So I think, if not in its birth, I think its birth is a powerful symbol to most Southerners. It absolutely is wrapped up in these, in, you know, this fight over racial identity and equality.
So the battle flag has become a battle flag.
It has.
Again.
I understand that, you know, for many Southerners who had ancestors that fought in the Civil War for the Confederacy, it's a very, very personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is part of their family heritage.
Mm.
But at the same time, I think folks have to remember that that symbol is a very powerful symbol for African Americans as well. And so, you know, white Southerners are protective of their own family heritage. Well, why not be sensitive also to the family heritage of thousands and thousands of African Americans as well, and be empathetic and be sympathetic of their family heritage as well.
Many of whom fought, their ancestors fought in the war on the other mm-hmm. side.
Over 23,000 African Americans fought for the Union from Kentucky
mm-hmm.
as well.
Well, and I very much understand how, you know, you're looking at someone from whom you descend who fought against the United States, who may have owned other human beings, and yet their blood, you don't want them to be the bad guy, and yet I can't even bring myself to say, but they are, because I mean, I'm in a similar situation. I had ancestors who were Confederates, and I don't want to think of them as the bad guy.
I don't think you have to. I mm-hmm. think in many ways what we're condemning is the symbology and the structures that created that situation. And
right.
I think personal choice and agency matters. I'm an historian. But that being said, I think there are many historical situations where you can condemn what was a macro event that was a total train wreck that sucked up an enormous amount of people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't name examples because I don't want people freaking out. But suffice it to say, there are other countries that have had very, very difficult periods that involved mass complicity, mass involvement. And there are ways to condemn phenomena related to that era, terrible things that happened, but also understand, look, my great-great-great-grandfather was a man of his time and place.
Mm-hmm.
He believed very strongly in his home state,
right.
Et cetera, states' rights. So I think you can draw distinctions between, you know, de-emphasizing symbols and trying to move forward, but also admitting they were fallible and they were human. I mean, this is one of the things we do in history. They were just human beings.
Right.
And Todd, it's not that they were the bad guy. I mean, thousands of Southerners fought for their hearth and home. They fought, because they were from Virginia or Mississippi, and they fought for reasons other than slavery. But then you have somebody like Jefferson Davis, you know, who rose to become president of the Confederacy. And if you look at the documents and you look at the Constitution of the Confederacy, and there in black and white, you know, is a clause for the protection of slavery, you know, and there's no getting around a document like that.
The cornerstone, if you'll favor the historical comparison, the speech by Alexander Stevens. Well, my last question is, how do you see this all playing out? I mean, the commission hasn't so far chosen to do, I mean, they've chosen to actually let the statue stay right where it is. I mean, but how does the situation play out? Is it eventually going to go away?
I think eventually we've got to come to terms with Kentucky's history. And as I wrote in a newspaper column here a while back, there are five statues in the Capitol Rotunda. This is not a matter, please hear me, it's not a matter of political correctness.
Certainly.
But all five of those statues are white men. There is no statue to honor the contributions of African Americans. There are no statues to honor the contributions of women Kentuckians. I mean, I just recently did research and some writing on Linda Neville, who was a woman who founded the Kentucky Society to Prevent Blindness. Why not have a statue in honor of this woman who helped eradicate the terrible disease of trachoma that blinded thousands of children and families in eastern Kentucky? What about Madeline McDowell Breckenridge? What about Laura Clay? You know, what about Muhammad Ali or Isaac Murphy, the black jockey who owned the Kentucky Derby? You know, what about folks like that? They need to be commemorated, even with a statue in the Capitol Rotunda.
Dr. David Pizza?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This, you know, women, just looking at women, they're the majority of the population. We're not talking about some sort of minority. And that they're totally ignored, I find not representative of what the state really is like. And it will be even less representative in 50 years' time. I mean, that's why ultimately, you know, I mentioned these fears people have of change. The state is changing. And I think we need to find things from our history that can speak to wider and wider groups of people in the state.
And we shall see. Well, thank you, gentlemen, Dr. Dwayne Ball and Dr. David Pizzo.